Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories, energy techniques, and tools for awakening, transforming, and manifesting a way of clear thinking and clear living and seeing the infinite potential for your best life. Today, I am delighted to welcome Joanne DiMaggio, author of Karma Can Be a Real Pain. Hello, Joanne, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Cheryl. I'm really glad to be here.
And as many of our listeners know, yes, karma and other situations that we don't think we want can be a real pain, but also a way forward to many wonderful changes. Joanne, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, my guests and I share our experiences and views on metaphysical interest, going beyond the physical world to the universal laws of energy, always trying to understand our dual nature as energetic beings exploring a physical world and reality. I believe it's only by knowing our true essence that we can value ourselves and others and create a purposeful, healthy, and happy life experience, you know.
Well, we're on the same page with that.
The goal is, of course, to let go of limited thinking and fear and embrace the unknown world of possibilities. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Joanne shares her discovery that physical and mental illnesses may be the result of karma acquired in a past life. And if so, uncovering that lifetime may help us to resolve the problems and allow for true healing. Joanne has been actively involved with Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment, known as ARE, since 1987, has a master's degree in transpersonal studies, and is a graduate of the Eastern Institute of Hypnotherapy. Usually, Joanne, I have coincidences with my guests, and today I share your journey as I began my Reiki energy training at Edgar Cayce School in New York City. And I studied hypnotherapy, reflexology, craniosacral therapy, and pursued many healing techniques for my clients, hoping that we could get a greater self-awareness of soul life and understand universal energy. Now, this is my first question to most of my guests. It comes out in a little different way, but basically I'm going to ask you to think back to your childhood and remember a person, place, or experience that left an impression on you and may have influenced the path your life has taken and the values you hold now, dear, as an adult, because I feel we come into life with a soul plan, a destiny, and unresolved issues that we bring with us from past lives. So think back for a minute.
I would say that I've had many pivotal moments. You know, I read the book Soul's Code, when it talked about watching children and the things that they were interested in and what they resonated to as a sign of where what their soul's mission was going to be. And I remember as a child, I grew up Catholic, and I remember that something about the Catholicism and the doctrine just did not sit well with me, the idea that we only had one life and that if we screwed up, even if we didn't mean to, that we would go straight to hell, even if we had lived this saintly life. And when I was relatively young, I think I was a preteen, and I read the book The Search for Bridie Murphy, which was my introduction to reincarnation, and that made absolute total sense to me. And after that, I always had it in the back of my mind, because I had a lot of experiences that led me to wonder whether I had a previous lifetime in the 18th century. And but I sort of put that away and didn't think about it until 1987, when Shirley MacLaine's Out on a Limb was broadcast as a miniseries. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the big wake-up call for thousands of sleeping metaphysicians. And, of course, that program had a lot to do with reincarnation, and that really put me on the path. But like I said, there's so many, and even my love of the Beatles, you know, back in the 60s, I think that they planted a lot of spiritual seeds in many people as well. So I think it was just a series of synchronistic events that led me to who I am today.
Well, we're all here to remember our soul life, and that, I believe, is the purpose of a physical incarnation. And my life was similar to yours as a child. I'm Jewish, but wasn't brought up very religiously. But any time I was in temple, I felt the grown-ups there were missing the boat. I said I had so many questions. I loved God. I knew there was something more. I must have felt energy even as a child, and I was very empathic. So I was picking up other people's emotions, and I just didn't think it was enough. I thought we could have a personal connection, so I did. I talked to my little doll, Jerry, and that's how I grew up and maybe received information to help me on my path even from the beginning. But I think we're born that way. Some of us are more awakened from the very beginning, because perhaps we're the teachers and are the leaders for the 80% of people who resist. They actually almost resist this transformation, which is so natural and healthy for us. But let's go on to, you first pursued past life research in Chicago and then Charlottesville, but waited 10 years before doing regression on yourself. Why did you wait, and tell us how your interest has evolved since then?
Well, I had had regressions on myself. I just had waited until I got my hypnotherapy certification so that I could do the regressions with others, on others. The reason I waited was because I never saw myself in that position. I thought of myself, I think of myself as a reporter for the universe. So I'm a writer by profession. I love to do research. So I love to observe what's going on around me and then put it in the written word and then disseminate that to everybody. So my thought was, well, I just absolutely think, I felt passionate about past life work. I surrounded myself with the people that were on the leading edge of this, authors and practitioners and past life therapists, everybody that I admired, they came through my past life organization, my research organization in Chicago. And one of them in particular, Henry Leo Bolduc, who was a speaker for the ARE, and he did many, many books and spoke about reincarnation. We became friends. I told him what my past life story was. He was intrigued, and we became friends. And he said, you know, Joanne, you know more about past lives than about 90% of the therapists that are out there. Why aren't you doing this work? Mm. And then I gave him my, you know, I'm a writer, I'm not a therapist. But he encouraged me, and I'm really glad that he did, because I did go ahead and got my certification, and then I started to see clients, and now I can do both. I actually participate in the sessions, offering the guidance to enable people to revisit their past lives. I help them put the pieces together, connect the dots to see, you know, how it's impacting them in the here and now, help them through the healing process, the forgiveness process, and then I write about it. So I've got the best of both worlds, and I'm really feeling very humbled by what I've experienced over these last 30 years.
Beautiful, beautifully said. I love that reporter for the universe, because I, you know, I'm a medium and I download information for clients, and I very rarely do it for myself. I just wait patiently for whatever I need to experience to happen, and I'm just very grateful that I can help people in gathering information that helps them find their soul and their destiny and their plan and heal if they choose that, because always the choice is with the soul. So I did love that, reporter for the universe. I guess that's what we are.
Yeah, right.
So can you tell us about soul writing and how it is connected to Edgar Cayce's inspirational writing? And before you answer that, I'll tell you a little story. Once a long time ago when I was beginning, a girl who worked for me said to me, haven't you found Edgar Cayce yet? So I hadn't at that moment. And then, of course, a short while later, I have read his work, and I actually feel the work I'm doing is very much in line with the readings and the healing work that I do. So I like that as you're connected to it as well. So please tell us about soul writing and how it's connected to Edgar Cayce.
Well, I when I was attending Atlantic University, we had to choose a what they called a culminating project, and I had gone on the courses that I took were primarily in the writing track, and so I decided I was going to research the Edgar Cayce readings on inspirational writing. Now, he called it inspirational writing because back in the 20s and 30s, it meant something completely different than it does today. If you go online and go to Amazon and type in inspirational writing, you're going to get all Christian genre books pop up. If you were to type in automatic writing, you're going to get all occult books. So I knew that Cayce's definition of it was somewhere in the middle. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I could think about this, meditate on it, and see if I can come up with a more contemporary name that would actually describe what this is. Basically, soul writing is a written form of meditation. So if you think about prayer as you talking to God and meditation as God talking to you, this is you taking notes. So you go into an altered state of consciousness just by doing some deep breathing, however you enter meditation. Everybody's got their own ritual that they like. You go into a meditative state, surround yourself with white light, say a prayer of protection. That's very important. And then with a pen in your hand, or you could do it at the keyboard if you like. I don't, because with your eyes are halfway closed, if you move over, you won't be able to read anything that you wrote. So I like to do it by hand. I like the feel of the pen. I use a fountain pen, so I really like that. I'm so old-fashioned. I like the feel of it on the paper. And then you can ask any question you want. It's like a 24/7 phone home card to Spirit. So there's always somebody at the other end of the line. So you can ask any question you want. You can ask about relationships. You can ask about past lives. You can ask about finances, career, anything that you feel you need guidance on, and you'll get an answer in writing. So I incorporate that in my past life work because I was getting past life information using this process, and I now teach it, and I wrote a book about it called Soul Writing. And I incorporate that now in my regression work so that after the actual regression session, I put a pad of paper on my client's lap and a pen in their hand, and I say, now ask your soul if there's anything else it could give you in writing that you didn't see in the regression. So it could be the backstory, or it could be answers to questions. And while they're doing the writing, I'm also doing the writing. I'm connecting with my friends upstairs, and I'm saying, is there anything you can give me on their behalf that I could share with them? And so then the writing comes through me as well. So in the book, you'll see that I included their regression session, and then I included either their soul writing or my soul writing or both, depending on how impactful it was. But this has been a tremendous asset and a very profound, transformative tool. It is different from automatic writing. I am really adamant about making that clear. A lot of people got into trouble with automatic writing during and came to the ARE with situations of possession. So we don't go that route. We don't call it that. But people do get them mixed up, and the terms are interchanged quite often when they really shouldn't be, because there is a difference between the two. And
yes,
that's also in my book.
And in the book you do give a chart to show the differences. And actually, when I do readings for people, I'm doing soul writing, and I'm in a meditative state, and I don't do it on a computer. I like the energy coming through. And when I give the reading to people, I give them the handwritten sheets rather than type it up for them, because the actual energy is within the feelings that are coming through. So I very much understand what you're saying. It's coming from a divine source within us, and as such, it is a means for soul development. Now, let's go on to how did the idea of combining soul writing with past life work come about. I know you had a feeling for the 18th century, and mm-hmm. you talked about in the book. It was very interesting. So tell us mm-hmm. something about that.
Well, I started to listen to a subliminal tape that Dick Sutphin, I don't know how many of your listeners remember Dick Sutphin, had produced called Start Writing Now. And I had gotten this tape because I wanted to improve my commercial writing. It had nothing to do with my spiritual writing. But when I used it, I started to get an image of a woman, long dark hair, white shift, coming down these stairs, holding a candle, going to a desk, pulling out a parchment paper and a quill pen and writing, and as she was writing, I was writing, and I was getting diary entries, and they were dated 1793 and 1802, and I thought, what in the world is this? Well, as it turned out, I was connecting with my own past life aspect, and she was communicating to me through the writing. I found out a lot later that there were other writers that had that same experience. Frank DeMarco talked about it in his book, Chasing Smallwood, where he actually had a conversation with his past life aspect using this form of writing, where, you know, he'd ask a question and then he would get the answer. So it was really fascinating to me. So I thought, well, if I can do it, I wonder if everybody can do it. So I started to introduce it with my first research project. And I thought, after I did it and the results were so phenomenal, that I decided that I was going to continue to include it with all of my past life work, whether it was research or whether it was an actual client. I give them that option at the end of the regression. Do you want to come back? Have you had enough? Do you want to process what you received? Or do you want to go a little deeper? And we'll both do the writing. So it's totally an option with people. But those who have used it, I've been absolutely astounded at the profound nature of the message that comes through that way.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I recently had an experience like that where I was downloading George Washington's thoughts, and I saw him at a desk writing as I was taking down the notes that mm-hmm. he was giving me, because in my new book, New Life Awaits, I have a lot of connections to George Washington. And in light of the election, the very challenging last 2 years that we've all mm-hmm. been put through with tremendous changes going on, I felt I would like to know how he felt about what was going on. And it is the epilogue of my new book. It can be found on my website, CherylGlick.com, if readers would like to go to it. Yeah,
that's fascinating, because Edgar Casey did a reading on a little boy, a baby boy 3 days old, back in 1936, and he said he was the reincarnation of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander the Great. And as a matter of fact, he lives here in Charlottesville. He's 80 years old now. And what Casey said in that reading was pretty much defined his life, because he said, this soul can do for the world what Thomas Jefferson did for this country. Well, of course, he hasn't done any of that, and it's weighed very heavily on him. I don't know how many people, if they're three, you know, at the age of three, they're told that they had two incredible past lives. How do you live up to that, right?
Well, I don't always think it's that we are the reincarnation or had that life. I think we may have been connected in spirit to them and shared some experiences, and perhaps can use some of that energy in living our own life now. So mm-hmm. I try to make that clear. Mm-hmm. I've had past life regressions, and I've had dreams and feelings, and I've traveled to places and seen things that were in my dreams that I had mm-hmm. never seen before. Mm-hmm. So I think when we're in spirit, it may be in between lives, we're downloading and joining with a lot of other energies and sharing it. So I'm sorry that man felt that he didn't live up to what he was told of, but perhaps he did something else using that energy and using that wisdom in a minor way that was just as effective and part of his soul journey in this life. So I wish I would have been able to say that to him. I don't like to hear anyone feel that they didn't live up to their life.
Yeah,
everything we're doing is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And it could be that I told him, I said, this could just be a life that's a respite for you.
Yes.
You don't have to, sometimes after you've accomplished something really great in a lifetime, the next time you just come here on vacation, basically, and you don't really have to deal with anything humongous like that. I said, so there's always time, there is no time in spirit.
Right.
So, but I'm writing about him because I think he's very fascinating, and I think that I think if I could get him to talk about from Jefferson's perspective about the state of affairs right now, I think it would be fascinating.
And he might have a great deal of soul wisdom about it that would come forth.
Exactly.
And we would find it to be accurate. It doesn't mean we have to use all the knowledge we have used in past lives, but it's still part of our energy and comes forth when we need it. Now let's go on to tell us about the actual research project for your books and who you had several other books and who made up the volunteers.
Well, I decided to do this third book on physical karma because I heard Dr. Norm Shealy at a medical intuition conference at the ARE, and he made the astonishing statement that he thought that all illness was past life related. Now, he's a medical doctor making the statement, and I saw a shift in my own practice where more and more people were coming to me telling me that they wanted to do a past life regression because they believed that they, that the source of their pain or their physical condition had to do with another lifetime. So I put it out there to anybody that wanted to, that had a physical condition, a chronic condition, if they would like to volunteer for my project. And so I had 50 people come forward. 23 of those are actually in the book. Of those 23, 18 were women and 5 were men. They ranged in age from 34 to 74, and their professions were very impressive. I had registered nurse, I had aerospace project manager, defense contractor, flight attendant. I had veterans, professors. So these are not the kind of people that you would think would be prone to making up stories or fanciful imagination. These were people that were well-respected in their field. Not all of them believed in past lives, by the way, when they came forward, but they were curious. They came in with conditions like arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, had liver and kidney problems, weight and digestive issues, a lot of head-related concerns, foot, leg, and back pain. I even had some sexual karma, drug and alcohol abuse, and mental and emotional disorders. And so they came in, and we did a screening process first, and I interviewed them. And then when we did the actual session, the first thing we did was do a body scan. So as I was relaxing every part of their body, I asked them to do a scan of that part of their body to see if they had any sensitivity, any discomfort, or birthmarks. Now, birthmarks grew out of the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia, who did a lot of work with children in past lives, and he said that birthmarks were often the remnants of a past life wound. So if in doing the body scan, if they came up with, say they had a birthmark in their shoulder or in their abdomen or in their back, it could have been that's where they had a gunshot wound or a stab wound or something like that. So I took notes of all that. Then we did the actual regression. I took them to the past life that this condition first originated. And then we followed up with the soul writing. And then about 6 to 8 weeks later, I came back to them to do a follow-up questionnaire to ask them if their condition had disappeared, if it's gotten better, if it was the same, or even if it had gotten worse. And 17%, which about 4 of the 23, experienced a complete healing, and 30% said their condition improved substantially. The majority of them said that their condition went unchanged, but what was interesting about them, they said that their perspective on it changed, that they looked at it differently.
Yeah, Joanne, sometimes if a condition doesn't shift, it's because the soul is not ready to make that shift yet.
Right.
It takes the right timing, let's put it. Let's just say that. But I also use, when I'm helping people get into a relaxed state using Reiki energy healing, a technique called Boynton It's what you were talking about, a body scan. You start with the feet and then you go up and you're in a relaxed state and you try to feel where any pain or tensions reside. You're using it to work with past life. I'm using it to get them to be more aware of their body as a receiver of information about their health and well-being and also their progress in life, their soul progress. So it's a similar use of energy. Now, can you tell us, there were a couple of very interesting cases where people would think one thing and it would affect their life now, but they were really bringing it from a past life. So can you give us the highlight of a session that you found compelling?
I think that the one that I really thought was interesting was Emma. She was a 65-year-old healthcare provider. She came in with sciatica. And she regressed to an 18th century life in France. Her name was Marie. She was a prima ballerina. And during the regression, she actually spoke in a French accent, which I had not experienced with anybody before. I believe that the term is xenoglossy, but that's when people actually speak the foreign language. But she was speaking it with an accent. So the significant event in that life is that she had a rival, a younger dancer, and she initiated an accident in which this girl tripped and fell and broke her leg, and that ended her career. And so in this life, you know, with the sciatica, she suffers it in the exact same place that this young woman had broken her leg. And in this life, the young woman, in the past life, the young ballerina, is now her daughter in this life. And they, the karma that they share, they've had a very difficult relationship. And Emma said that she's experienced nothing but rejection and payback and judgment from her daughter. But now she understood why. She understood where that was coming from. So she was able then to adjust the way she felt about her daughter and their relationship, and that in and of itself was healing for her. So that was an interesting one. I mean, there's so many of them.
Absolutely. You know, we travel in soul groups, and people in our lives have been with us before. And yes, you've shown in your book that karma is tricky, but there's cures. There's understanding your deeper sense of soul and that you brought into this life, and just understanding it is a healing in its own right. So
absolutely.
So I want to thank you, Joanne DiMaggio, author of Karma Can Be a Real Pain, for sharing your long study of the world of true healing, which is ultimately the collaboration of mind, body, spirit, to remember our eternal essence and refine our soul as we experience events in the physical world in real time, in this time. Past lives do give us a lot of information, but we have to remember we're living in this time and we want to make the most of it. And we want to bring out in our thinking, through knowing about our past life experiences, opportunities always to release fears, misbeliefs, and the limitations of those past life experiences, and release what we need to from recent experiences in this life. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, Joanne has been able to share with us the details of the regression, the transcript of the soul writing session, and the results of the follow-up interviews and results that her clients have experienced to determine whether the session resulted in the condition being healed, improved, or remaining the same. We have seen how ordinary men and women meet their past life aspects and discover the karmic origin of their chronic conditions, resulting in a happier, healthier life in these present times. Karma can be challenging, but learning that there is a cure is life-altering. Joanne shares with us that Marianne Woodward, author of Healing Your Past Lives, Exploring the Many Lives of the Soul, said, Past life memories become embedded in the subtle body, defined as layers of energy that surround and penetrate the physical body. They re-imprint in the living body, possibly as rashes, deformities, birthmarks, weaknesses in certain limbs, or organic disorders such as weak bladder, heart, gynecological problems, and etc. Examining attitudes from a previous life takes introspective soul work, and over time, once the connection is made, healing can occur. To find out more about this topic and to purchase Karma Can Be a Real Pain, go to joannedimaggio.com. Joanne and I would have you remember that this life is a chance to repair and improve your soul essence and the relationships you have with those who share some of your karmic residue. If we can live our most loving, compassionate, and hopeful life today, we do not need to create karma for us to take with us into our new life, which awaits us. Put your thoughts and energy into living boldly, courageously, and rightfully, and create good karma in this lifetime, which ultimately improves life for those that you're living with here and those beyond, because we're all interconnected and unified. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of Life is No Coincidence, The Living Spirit, and my next book, New Life Awaits. To read about and listen to conscious authors, psychologists, spiritualists, educators, scientists, artists, and musicians reveal the mysteries of the universe and life, go to my website, CherylGlick.com. Shows may also be heard on DreamVision7Radio.com and WebTalkRadio.net. Thank you for listening.